Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we are joined by one of the faces of Sky Sports F1's coverage, the ever engaging and very nice Natalie Pinkham is this week's guest. She's reported for Sky since 2012 and before that has had stints with the BBC as well as working on a number of different projects including some amazing and hard hitting documentaries and charitable work. It was an honour to chat with her and hear her story. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 36 of the Motormouth podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I have to head, as always, over to Essex to bring in a stallion of a man in the county that is home to Romford Greyhound Track, where they once hosted cheetah racing, no less, in an attempt to get more people through the gates. And did you know that Colchester in Essex is Britain's oldest recorded town and was in fact our first ever capital city? It also has the enviable title of being hometown to The Prodigy, Depeche Mode, Alison Moyet and Jessie J. However, enough of the Essex-based frivolity. We're not here to talk about the home of Towie. No, we're simply here to bring in my Essex-based co-host, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
Wow, I really think you actually know more about Essex than I do, and I've lived here for 23-odd years.
It took a lot of digging to get those facts, because, as you know, I've used a lot over the last year or so.
I don't know how you're still going. You're really eking it out. But either way, I'm good. Still alive in Essex, living in lockdown life. Well, sort of half lockdown, whatever you want to call it these days. All good. I'm very excited, though, because I am going to a little staycation tomorrow.
Nice.
Into the Peak District, so that'd be fun, just to see with the family, to see something else other than my own garden.
Lovely.
So that'll be fun. And exciting news as well that our Lord and Saviour, Paul de Resta, has been announced as a reserve driver for McLaren.
He's not in though yet, so don't get carried away.
I don't wish any harm on any of the drivers, wouldn't that be an amazing story?
I'm fine. What would you do if it happened? Like, would you pass out?
I lost it last time when he raced for Williams. So I don't know what I'd do this time. Because he's actually in a car that could score points, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't know. I don't want to get too excited.
I think he could struggle. And we'll have to have a chat with our guest about this later on, get her take on it. Right. Talking of which, shall I introduce her?
Yeah, let's do it.
So today we're honoured to be joined by Natalie Pinkham, a familiar face to all of us on Sky Sports and Sky Sports F1, a mother, broadcaster, charity campaigner. She's the face or the voice of her In the Pink podcast, which if you've not heard, make sure to go and check that out wherever you listen. Ladies and gents, it's my pleasure to welcome Natalie Pinkham to the Motormouth podcast.
Wow. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well.
Very
how are
well,
you?
Thank you. Now, how are you? How's life been in this lockdown world?
Well, you know, it's been pretty good, actually. We've actually stayed in one place for more than 3 or 4 days. So I've Yeah, I've had a lovely time. I mean, look, I know it's been difficult for a lot of people and there's obviously extra pressures and anxiety and tensions for a lot, but I've actually loved just being my husband and my two kids. Homeschooling, forget about it. Terrible.
Nightmare.
No chance. But we've trained together in the garden. Obviously, the weather's been amazing and we're lucky to have, albeit a postage stamp of a garden, it's still outside space. Yeah. And I think that's the deal breaker, isn't it? Whether if you have or haven't got that. So
yeah.
I feel a lot for those who haven't. It's been tough, but no, on the whole, very positive.
It's the homeschooling thing is an absolute nightmare, isn't it? Well, I've got three kids now and we're homeschooling two of them and they just can't do it. We have actually given up.
Hang on. They can. We can't.
Well, there's that as well. Yeah. And then you try and do it and it just gets aggravated and then you turn to alcohol and then the rest is history. It's an absolute flipping nightmare. But I just want to get them back to school. It feels like they haven't been there for months.
It's tough on them, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, this will be a period of their lives that they never forget. And I'm sure it will toughen them up and it'll be... go down in the history books as being a chapter of all our lives that changed us and hopefully mm-hmm. long run for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're obviously very familiar with podcasts. You've got one yourself, In the Pink. How's it all going?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I've got just done one with George Russell. I'm doing one with Alex Albon this afternoon and Kevin Magnussen next week. So it's very F1 heavy at the moment.
Yeah.
But then I've also got Trevor Nelson. He's on Friday. Monday. So there's a real eclectic mix, actually. I mean, it's just selfish of me, really, because I just interview people that I want to talk to. Yeah. but, you know, whatever background they're from. So it's nice. It's just, yeah, it's lovely. I love doing podcasts.
Let's take it back to the start then, as we do with all of our guests. So we like to sort of deep dive into their lives and careers. Tell us about you and how it all started. You know, was broadcasting and motorsport and sport in general, was that always a thing for you growing up, or did you just sort of fall into it? What was early life like?
Yeah, always sport crazy family. I have to say my chosen sport was always athletics. I love track and field. I love watching it and participating. Zola Budd was my out and out hero growing up. She didn't wear shoes, so neither did I. And I used to run around the garden, back into the house, back out into the garden, leaving paw prints everywhere, driving my mum mad. But then very early, motorsport was a thing for us, as was rugby and football. Yeah, we sort of loved everything. My brother got me into F1 because he's older, and as with all older brothers, you want to try and be cool and be like them and hang out with them. So I feigned an interest in order to spend more time with Sam, and then was like, oh, actually, this is quite cool. But he was really good. He's always been very sort of techie and engineering sort of minded, like, unlike me, he kind of does understand the full workings of a car. He used to take old bangers to part and put them back together again. And I've never been like that, hence a huge reliance on Ted in our team.
Yeah.
I spend all my time with him trying to learn. It feels like I've transferred that from my brother across to Ted. The pressure's on Ted now.
Yeah.
It's good.
So now your brother is also a broadcaster on the radio. Was he a bit annoyed that you ended up going down the F1 route and he didn't?
He did, actually. He used to say that it was his dream job, and he flipped between being sort of jealous and actually then sort of living vicariously. But he had a family before I did, and so that was never going to be a sort of viable option for him to try. He's always been a real homeboy as well. He doesn't love travel as much as I do, but he loves it, and he comes to races when he can. He works for Virgin now. He does the breakfast show before, so he feeds into Chris Evans' show, and then quite often he does like Monday mornings for Chris. So Chris can have a nice long weekend.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant. And Chris is obviously a massive motorsport fan as well. So it all ties in very nicely.
Yeah, very nice. And when did it for you become something in terms of broadcasting and motorsport? When did it become on your radar that this could be a career choice for you?
Well, to be honest, it didn't. I always wanted to work in television. I wasn't sure whether in front or behind the camera. I just was fascinated by this box in the corner of the room that could get messages anywhere in the world. And I was, you know, my mum used to say that I would stay and watch all the adverts. I was so interested in the sort of production of things, but she did always think I was a bit of a show pony. So even like when I made toast, I'd be like, and here we have a slice of bread. And I'll ask my glamorous assistant to pass me the butter. This is how you butter the bread, and just to drive everyone mad. So they always felt that I would be in front of the camera, but I kind of wanted to understand the workings of the industry first. So I was a runner, researcher, assistant producer, and then got my opportunity actually presenting live poker.
Which is quite
handy because people are either nodding off or pissed. So they don't know if, you know, it's quite a good place to cut your teeth. They don't know if you've made a mistake because no one's really concentrating. You get transfixed with live poker, don't you? You're like, I just watched one more hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And then before you know it, it's like 4 hours later.
Yeah. Are you a poker player? Have you had a go? You are?
Yeah, so I used to do the European Poker Tour with my dear friend Caroline Flack, and we used to travel around Europe together, both playing and presenting poker together. And it was a dream job, you know. We went to every city in Europe and just had a brilliant time. And it was a great place to learn live television. And then the opportunity in terms of Formula One came because Five Live contacted me and said, would you like to be a pit lane reporter for us? And it was really out of the blue. And I thought, oh my God, that would be amazing. But quite intimidating at the same time, because it's one thing to be a fan of the sport. It's another thing altogether to broadcast from it. And, you know, as you guys well know, F1's the kind of sport where the more you learn, the more you need to learn.
Yeah.
It's like this giant onion that you just keep peeling layers off. And it was a steep learning curve, but one that I've really enjoyed.
We've had a few broadcasters on the show, and I think it was Jenny Gow maybe that said to us, she thought she knew a lot about Formula One, then started working in it and realised when she started working, people like Paul de Resta, Harry, I said his name, we'll talk about him, that she suddenly realised she had so much to learn and actually knew nothing. Yeah. Did you experience that when you came into the sport?
Yeah, you definitely learn on the job, and you know, we're all works in progress, so you never stop learning. And it's constantly evolving as a sport. It's not really like football or rugby to that extent. Yeah. You know, there's so much technical know-how, which again is why I refer back to Ted. But it's great having past racers with you because they give you such a different perspective. So it's brilliant working with people like Paul de Resta.
Well, let's talk about Paul de Resta, because
I tried to say it in my sexy radio voice then.
Don't, you'll get Harry overexcited. So just so our listeners are aware, I'm sure they already know, but Harry is the biggest Paul de Resta fanboy on the planet, bar none. And there is talk.
I don't think I've ever met anybody else who likes Paul de Resta as much as I do. And no. I can't explain the fascination at all. Right. But I don't think it's in a weird way. Just a big fan.
Just try.
So, well, I mean, I've watched Formula One.
He's getting all giddy. You can't get his words out.
I'm just so nervous about Paul de Resta. I remember watching Paul de Resta vividly from 2011 to 2013, his main stint in F1. And I love an underdog, always have, always will. He was British, Scottish, but British. That car was always like, if he got a fourth place or a sixth place, that was such a big deal. And he was better than most of all of his teammates. Him and Hülkenberg were pretty evenly matched. And I just thought he deserves to be. And at the time, it was like he might take over from Schumacher in the Mercedes and all that was all the rumors that it was. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I can get on board with this guy. Underdog. Hamilton's already established. We've got Button. De Resta was the next one. And then he got sidelined. And I just thought it was so unjust and that he had such bad luck and that people didn't quite I think people misunderstood him as well. I don't think he maybe communicated very well the kind of person he was. I don't know, I've never met the man, but that's the reason I felt like I think his Formula One journey was cut short, and I think he could have been a very, very good Formula One
but he
driver.
Might be back. He could be back.
Could be, couldn't he?
Stranger things have happened. Honestly, you should have seen me when he replaced Massa all those years ago. I literally went ballistic. He proved that he still had it as well, because he had no practice and still did it. Anyway, that's the PDR chat. Still waiting for him to come on the podcast. That email, I haven't responded to my email yet, so give him a little nudge, will you? But we get sidelined by Paul de Resta quite a lot. Let's go back to you. F1, dream job for many. Can you pinpoint a best part of the job?
Well, certainly when I was younger, before I had kids, the travel was a massive draw for me because I've always just wanted to see the world and experience different cultures. And what we used to do is we used to tack on a few days before and after each race to really explore each city and get to know the area and the country that we're in. It is much more difficult to do that now. And obviously, I want to get straight back after the race to be back with my kids. And actually, I do take the kids to quite a few races as well. So I remember when I had Wilf, and he's five now, but I had him, and 3 months after I had him, I strapped him to me and we went to our first race together to Barcelona. And it was brilliant. And he's been in pit lanes and in and around cars ever since. And as has Willow. And I want them to have that sort of, well, that kind of don't be fazed by anything attitude that I grew up with. That's always what my parents instilled in me, just to go out exploring. So that's definitely a massive part of it. Also, I just think it's such an interesting sport with so many subplots. We've talked about the giant onion already, but it's this idea that there's so many elements to the sport. Mm. I love the politics of it. I love the difference of opinion and cultural differences that do tend to clash in the paddock. I'm always really interested why some driver dynamics work and some don't, why some engine suppliers and teams seem to work together in partnership and others don't. And it's just got everything. And, you know, racing on top of all of that and meeting incredible people. And actually, I think, to be honest, a bit like you guys, I love meeting people. I just love talking to people and finding out about people.
Yeah.
I'm like a sticky beak, I think.
Yeah, no, well, we're the same. And everyone's got a story, haven't they? You know, it doesn't matter who you talk to. Everyone has their own individual opinion and story of how they got to where they are. It's fascinating. And as I mentioned off air, we've had a couple of your colleagues on the show already in the form of Crofty and Karun Chandhok. You've got a lovely bunch of people that you work with. What's it like working with them? And who's the weirdest?
Ooh. Well, I tell you, we've all got our quirky little idiosyncrasies and foibles, but they are genuinely a lovely bunch of people. You're spot on. And they have to be because we spend so much time together. Certainly, again, in the early days, we, you know, it was pretty much 9 months of the year. We just traveled. But we used to have so much fun. And we still do. We definitely still do. But yeah, just a lovely kind of mix of characters. Not enough women for my liking.
Yeah.
Definitely want more of a female presence. And in the early days, I used to do the job with Georgie Thompson. And Georgie was my best friend from childhood because we went to boarding school together. And we couldn't believe it when we ended up in the same team at work. So she was working for Sky. So she'd come up through the ranks at Sky. And I'd gone the BBC route. And then when Sky got the rights from the BBC, I was obviously working for Five Live. And then when they got the rights for the TV to come across, Sky then, well, I threw my hat in the ring. I said, go on, can you give me a chance? And they said, yeah, okay. So I went across with Ted, Crofty, Martin Brundle, Ant. And so it was great because I had like four really good mates already. And then I was joining another best mate. And I'd known Lasers for 20 years as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it was this lovely coming together and we, yeah, just had such a laugh and we shared information. And what I love is that they're all team players. We've all got each other's backs and no one wants to see another one struggle. Yeah. So we all work hard to help each other out in that respect. And we all got, you know, we're all juggling. We've all got pressures and challenges from home. And so it is so vital that you do get on with your colleagues.
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
That really comes across on screen as well. Talking about sort of inclusivity, and that's quite hot in motorsport at the moment, obviously. Yeah. Particularly being a woman in the paddock, as we've discussed, how's it been? You've been in Formula One since the BBC Five Live days. You've seen a lot of things change. Has enough changed? Are there moves to make? How do you see the future going? How does it feel to be a woman in the paddock right now?
No, not enough has changed. I mean, we are still 88% male and 91% white. I mean, they're terrible stats for the sport. And so, no, short answer, there's still a lot of work to do. I've always said that once you're in the sport, it feels like a meritocracy. So if you work hard, you'll get your opportunities and you can power through. But there aren't enough female role models within the sport or members of the BAME community in order to, for people watching to feel like it is a viable career choice, that it's accessible. They need relatable role models, which is why I know I came in for quite a lot of criticism at the time from those that love the glamour of the grid girls. And I did too. But for me, the problem was if beautiful girls stood in front of cars doing nothing other than standing in front of the cars, then young girls watching would think that their only chance of being involved in F1 was to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And nothing else, you know, not talk about cars, not drive them, not negotiate contracts around them, not run teams. So this is why we really need to put the spotlight more on other women like Claire Williams. But actually, next week, I'm doing a feature with the three female strategists. So the stats I've just told you, very different when it comes to strategists. We've got 30% of the strategists in Formula One are women.
Really? That's great.
Really cool. So I'm going to go and see them next week. We've got Bernie at Racing Point. We've got Hannah at Red Bull. And we've got Ruth at Alfa Romeo. All brilliant women, brilliant brains, brilliant minds. And this is what we need to be showing, is that there is stuff happening, but more needs to happen and be a cause and effect thing. So, yeah, I'm really passionate about it. And Karine and I are working hard on creating ideas to improve the diversity within the sport, because it's vital, you know.
Yeah.
2020, for God's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Claire there. She's come in for criticism over the last, you know, couple of years. Some of it just and fair, some of it perhaps not. Do you think the fact that she's a woman has any bearing on some of that criticism? Do you think that still exists in the sport?
I'm afraid so. It would be very naive of me to pretend it doesn't. I mean, I often say, you know, if people ask me whether I've experienced sexism within the sport, I say, no, of course not. And I think, hang on a minute. Until people like me actually acknowledge that everyday sexism is a thing, unconscious bias is a thing, then nothing's going to change. Now, has it affected me? You know, hopefully not. It's probably toughened me up. I've probably got sort of thicker skin because of it. But it's there. Of course it's there. You know, you need to feel like you've got a voice, and you need to be able to use that voice and feel that it counts. And actually, I think this whole discussion at the moment has been really good for everyone within the sport, because they've suddenly actually started thinking, I wonder what it is like for someone like Lewis or Karine or a woman, you know, anyone who isn't represented to the fullest extent within our sport. And suddenly if you can just see the world through another's eyes for a moment, you realise what needs to change. I mentioned Trevor Nelson earlier. It reminds me of a time with him, because we used to do an NFL show together, and he said to me, should we go for a production meeting before the show? I was like, yeah, great. And I suggested a venue. And when we walked in to this venue, he just looked around and sort of rolled his eyes slightly. And I said, oh, you know, everything okay? And he goes, well, look around. Do you see another black person in this whole place? And I went, no, but I mean, he said, now imagine if I'd asked you to come and meet me for a production meeting and there wasn't another white person in the place.
Yeah.
You would have an issue with that. And I went, yeah, God, maybe I would.
Yeah.
And because I didn't see the color of his skin as an issue, I didn't think he would within that environment. And that's what I mean about just trying to see through another person's eyes.
Absolutely.
Just because you know you're not racist and you believe that you want change in the world doesn't mean that you can't occasionally just try to view things from another's perspective. And that's what we talk about, the need of educating all of us. We all need to learn more and be better.
I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And it made me think recently with this whole Lewis Hamilton, you know, and Black Lives Matter movement, for the first time in my life. And we were talking to Willie T. Ribbs about this. We had him on a few weeks ago, and we had a good chat with him about it. For the first time in my life, it made me reflect more and think more about how I perceive it all. And like you, you know, I don't think I'm a racist person, but I also didn't think about it enough. And it took a penny to drop in my own mind to go, actually, I get it now. Like, I do understand why Lewis feels uncomfortable. I understand about your story with Trevor. And not just that, you know, females in motorsport, transgender people like Charlie Martin in motorsport. And it's, if you put yourselves in their shoes, you suddenly look at things in a totally different way. And it's completely changed the way I view the whole thing. So it's definitely been a worthwhile discussion. Just to lighten the mood slightly, you dodged cleverly my question about who's the weirdest in the team.
Ah.
So I'm guessing it's going to be someone like Johnny, but I'd like to hear from you. Oh. Who's the oddball? Who's the one that you always laugh at in the team?
Oh, well, we definitely always laugh at Johnny, but with the most amount of love. I mean, he is universally the most popular person in our team. There is not a bad side to that man. He is kind, he's considerate, he's unselfish. You can't walk through the paddock without him being stopped 20 times. I mean, honestly, you've got to factor in at least half an hour extra Johnny time if you want to get from one end of the paddock to the other. It's slightly different now that there's hardly anyone in there, but yeah. He has got time for everyone and he will stop and talk. And he's just a very decent human being. So, yeah, he's right up there on the top step of the podium for me when it comes to teammates. In terms of the oddest, God, we've got a few. I mean, you know, there's a lot of OCD in our team. There's lots of quirky guys, particularly the ex-drivers, doing certain things, you know. There has to be a certain amount of dips of the tea bag and the teacup. There has to they iron their own underpants. You know, they think, are they? I mean, I drive them mad because I'm quite messy, and they're like, "Oh my God, Pinky, this just absolutely drives me nuts." Crofty, for example, the other day at Silverstone, we don't have catering because of coronavirus, so we have these little packed meals that we bring in and put in the microwave. And I'm like rushing, like a typical mum trying to do too many things at the same time and probably dropping a few plates while I'm doing it. I'm literally and metaphorically. And I go and put the food into the microwave and grab it and run off and eat it. Crofty comes back and he goes, "There was still 23 seconds left on the microwave." I said, what do you mean? Well, you left 23 seconds. Do you always do that? And I said, well, no, I just needed to eat it quickly because I've got to go and do the show. Yeah, but you left 23 seconds flashing and beeping, and it really irritated me. I was like, "Oh my God!"
He's an odd one, isn't he? He told us that he had a fear of tea bags. Was it Harry?
Was it tea? Yeah, he's scared of tea bags. He doesn't like tea because he hates and has a phobia of tea bags.
Weird.
I mean, yeah. I have known the guy for like 10 years and I did not know that.
Well, yeah. Bring that up next time you see him and see if he backtracks.
He's a good man, though. I won't hear anything bad about Crofty because he is a very loyal friend.
We love Crofty.
But a bit of a weirdo.
All the best people are. Nat, now I think now is the perfect time for you to take part in the hardest quiz in motorsports. Cue music. Thank you, Timothy. Now, Nat, this quiz has been going on for some time now. We're really, really stretching the life out of it. There are 13 points up for grabs. We're going to play you a couple of clips. And basically, you hear the clips and then I ask you a few questions about them. They're all related to mostly the last Formula One race, which at this moment in time was the first Silverstone round. And also, there may be one or two in there relating to you and your career and sort of maybe interviews you've done, that kind of thing. Connor Daly currently sits at the top of the leaderboard with 13 points. So the only way to beat him is to match him. But if we're looking for, you know, some of your colleagues, Crofty, ninth with 11 points. Then we have, who else? Karun Chandhok. Sadly, is last with 3.5 points. He had a mare.
He's every person I know.
I know, and all the questions were about him, and he got them all wrong. It was awful. But are you ready for the hardest quiz in motorsport?
No, but let's do it anyway.
Let's do it. Let's have clip number one. Have a listen to this.
Here it comes.
Come on, give me something here.
I think you'll get that one.
Now, can you give me a bit of a context? Yes, yeah. Perfect.
Ice racing with Kimi Raikkonen. And he suggested that I had a go. And I asked him for some advice. He didn't give me any. He just said, just go. And then I smashed it up and wrote off the car on the first turn.
It is a brilliant feature. That is absolutely correct. Now, two more questions for you. What year was that in?
I think that was January 2013.
Absolutely correct. And what team was Kimi racing for at the
Renault.
Time?
Lotus.
Same sort of thing.
I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt on that one because technically it was Lotus Renault. Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah. I will give you that. Oh, thin ice. All right, let's have the second clip.
Here we go.
I don't know where you're expecting me to go, to be honest.
Hard, really hard.
Do you want to hear that again?
Yes, please.
I don't know where you're expecting me to go, to be honest.
Can you hear what he's saying? Do you need me to say what he's saying?
I don't know where you expect me to go, to be honest.
Yeah.
So who is saying that, and then what's sort of the context around it?
And was it from this last race?
From the last race. That's a bit of team radio from someone.
Oh, Alex Albon.
Boom, correct. Yep.
Have I got to then give more?
The context. So
what was he talking about?
I remember him saying it now. I don't know where you expect me to go, to be honest. Was he put out into traffic in quali? Was that why he was pissed off? No, I don't like that expression. hang on. I can't think.
Do you want it one more time?
Hear it one more time, and it wasn't qualifying.
Here, have it one more time. Here it comes.
I don't know where you're expecting me to go, to be honest.
The face of concentration. Right there.
Obviously, it was in the race.
It was in the race.
But hang on, he had a.
Time's up. Time's up.
No. He went to the back, and that he had a penalty because obviously, yeah, he got the penalty for 5 second penalty that he had to take in the pit stop, and then he went all the way to the back, and then he came through to take what, P8, P5.
But why did he have the penalty?
Because he impeded.
Come on.
No.
Oh yeah, come on.
I wouldn't say impeded.
We could be a bit lenient on that. Who?
Was it? It wasn't Lando. It was Leclerc.
No! No points. No, nothing.
I'm afraid. No. I will give you the point for. I'll give you 2 out of 3 for that
one.
Oh my
God! My head's gonna explode.
He had a crash with Kevin Magnussen in the first lap.
Of course he did. And then Kevin. Oh my God!
Kevin came on.
Yeah. Oh my God! That was only at Sunday, for God's sake.
That's blown the podium chances.
You know what? It's so funny because we have a running joke in the family that I have really bad short-term memory. And I used to blame it on the babies. We used to say it was baby brain. And then my husband said to me only the other day, how long are you going to... They're 5 and 4 now. They're not babies. Yeah. How long are you going to blame it on them? But you're right. It was, of course, first lap flash with Kevin, and then
you got all the rest of it. He got sent to the back, 5 second penalty, all that. But
I'm talking to him this afternoon.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, well now this last one, I'm actually a bit worried for now. Oh, sorry, no, what are we on? Number three.
I'm actually a bit worried now.
So have a listen to this. Same thing goes. It's a driver from last race. Have a listen.
Here it comes.
Guys, I'm so sorry.
That's Kvyat.
Yes.
And he was saying sorry, wasn't he? Because he was it in the race or he basically had a puncture and he went off and he effed up his race.
Yeah. You've redeemed yourself.
Totally redeemed yourself.
3 out of 3 for that one. Yeah, I think he thought it was his fault.
It wasn't his fault, and actually it wasn't.
But he was so annoyed because that car was capable of quite a lot at the weekend. Yeah.
I think he shoved the cameraman as well.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. Okay, right, we're back on track. We're doing well, even after that blip. Okay, this is your last bit of team radio, and then there's a bonus question. So one more bit of team radio for you. Have a listen.
Here we go.
Drove a race, ladies, and we have 17. Nothing left.
Yeah, Millie.
Grosjean.
We.
Yes, correct.
And do you know what? I felt a bit sorry for him because they took a nice gamble. They went out, they stayed out for longer on that first stint, and it looked, he was running P5 at one point, wasn't he?
Mm.
then he was a little bit of a naughty boy and got in the way of Daniel and
Carlos, Simon, wasn't it? Yeah.
He has a tendency to do that, doesn't he?
Naughty boy. And then obviously he just tumbled down the order again and it didn't work out. Has to have a bit of shocker, aren't they?
They really are. But you've done well there. You've got three points for that one.
I'm so annoyed about the album one. What a wally.
You only lost 1 point on that. So
you can still get right up the leaderboard.
That's all right.
Okay.
You're still doing well. You're up there. I think you're equaling Crofty right now if my maths works any good. So you need this final point.
Right.
Bonus question for you. Lewis Hamilton currently tops the Drivers' Championship at the time of recording, which is after the first British Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But how many points does he have?
Oh, for God's sake.
You can get within five.
If you get within five, I will give you the point.
I've got my applause button at the ready.
No, this is really annoying because I do know this, but I've just got 91 in my head because that's his polls. Oh, no.
You've got a bit of leeway.
No, I don't even want to hazard a guess. Where's my notebook?
No. Natalie's notebook does not come into this.
How quick's your maths?
I've just written it down so many times, I just can't remember it.
Give us a number.
Take a stab in the dark.
No, I can't.
Go on. I mean, you've already said a number, which is quite a good number.
Yeah.
But it's over 100.
Right?
Is it not?
No.
So is it in the 90s? Maybe high 80s.
Could be.
87.
Oh, well, that's good enough.
I'll give you the point. He has 88 points currently.
I'm actually sweating. Do you know how much I'm sweating right now?
That's why this is the hardest quiz in motorsport.
It's a tough one.
It's not hard. I should know that. I mean, I should. That should
to be fair, you should.
Yeah. Well, let's do the math, shall we? Fine. Let's do a tot up.
I think it's gonna be okay. Top five, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you've absolutely smashed Karun Chandot's score, so you don't have to worry about
not
that. So you really wanted to beat Crofty, who was on 11 points, 13 to top the leaderboard. I can tell you, Natalie Pinkham, you have scored 12 points, which puts
another
you
round of applause.
Ahead of Crofty, ahead of Jenny Gow, and in the lead of all the... Actually, that puts you...
Of the sky,
oh, no,
of the
push you third. Puts you third. Puts you third on the leaderboard.
Overall.
I was going to say I was a very happy Max Verstappen to have taken an unlikely second spot.
Yeah. I didn't think, but unfortunately, Brendan Hartley has 12.5. So you are half
what
a point away. He was brilliant. Thank you, Natalie Pinkham, for playing Motormouths.
Yeah, that was good. Well done. You can tell all your friends the highlight of your career. Well done, you top three. Listen, I want to touch on some of your charity and patron work. So you have a relationship with Hope and Homes for Children. Tell us a bit about the work that they do and your involvement with them.
Oh, well, they're an amazing charity. I came to be involved with them. God, I'm going to tell you, squeeze 20 years into 2 minutes. I basically went and worked as a volunteer in an orphanage in Romania when I was about 18.
Gosh.
And then it's always bothered me that I didn't do more at the time. Obviously, this was before you could, you know, there was no social media. There was no, couldn't even really kind of keep in contact via email. But I was really... frustrated by the fact I couldn't do more, particularly for one little girl called Morella, who I became particularly attached to. They'd always said, don't become attached to any of the children when you're out there, because the time will come when you have to leave again and you're basically abandoning them all over again. So I went back 10 years later. I convinced a film crew to come with me. Well, I say film crew, it's me and a bloke with a little camera. But we got a commission and a documentary went out on Channel 5. And we went to find her in search of Morella. That was the name of the documentary. And I found her actually tied to a radiator. And she had been tied to that radiator for... on and off pretty much for a decade. She'd become totally institutionalized. And I was obviously mortified because at age two, when I last saw her, she was bright-eyed and had so much potential. And I vowed, obviously, I felt incredibly guilty that I hadn't done more sooner. But I then started to fundraise for her and her friends, and I filed to adopt her. I couldn't bring her back to England because you're not allowed, international adoption isn't allowed. So I built a home for her and 11 of her friends and siblings. When a child is neglected to such an extent, their brain actually shrinks. So their life skills are stripped from them. So she could do more at 2 than she could at 12. Her hands were clawed, her feet had turned in, she couldn't talk. It was absolutely brutal. And we did a whole, I did a whole kind of project and another documentary on institutionalization, the impact it has on children. But actually my F1 friends were incredible. There was this lovely moment in 2011 when I was in the paddock in Australia and a guy called Paul Hembry from Pirelli came up to me and asked me what I'd been doing over the winter. And I said, well, you wouldn't believe it if I told you. Anyway, I told him the story that I'd been looking for this little girl. I'd been in the sewers under Bucharest looking for her. And then I found myself in the paddock in Melbourne, surrounded by mind-blowing wealth. You know, every step there was a billionaire. And I couldn't really process this huge leap that I'd taken between abject poverty and huge wealth. And I felt quite sort of disillusioned by it all. And I remember ringing my mum and saying, Mum, I just don't know if I can do this job. It's so weird. It's so different. And she said, well, look, stay put. And you never know, you could leverage your position in that world to help those that you've seen in Romania and beyond. And sure enough, fast forward, you know, what is it, 9 years now? I've had tremendous support from the F1 community, helped me build a house for Morella, helped me adopt her and these other profoundly damaged children. And Paul Hembry had said to me at the time, I'd like to give you your first check to build her a home because Pirelli are opening a factory in a place called Slatina, which is the last place Morella had been seen. So not only did I find her, but I had this incredibly serendipitous moment with Paul Hembry. And he himself had been abandoned at birth. And this is why.
Wow.
And he'd gone on to make
a chord,
huge success of his life. Incredible guy. And he gave me $25,000 to start the ball rolling. And, you know, I don't know. It motivates me every day. I've obviously gone on to have 2 of my own kids. I'm taking them back to see some of the projects that we work on. But our aim is to end institutionalization. And we do that by trying to keep families together. 80% of the world's orphans aren't actually orphans. They've been separated from their parents and families because of war and poverty. And what we need to do, particularly now with this coronavirus pandemic, is equip families, strengthen them, educate them to stay together and make it work and help them get jobs. And then sure enough, kids will grow up loved and safe. Safer, because actually when we talk to these children, the only thing they really care about is being in a family. They just want to be loved. Yeah. They don't want the new trainers, the expensive toys. They just want to be loved.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do.
Wow, that's amazing. Amazing.
I think that's why we love talking to such different people from the motorsport world, because you're right. It is such a, you know, having been in a paddock in a pit lane on the grid, it is such a bubble. It is such a, and you just, as soon as you step out of it, you just can't really comprehend what it is you've just done. It is sort of not, it's not real. And then meeting people like you have the experience, you know, the complete opposite to it. It's fascinating. It's amazing what you've been able to do. And thank God you stayed in the F1 job, because, you know, that's how you've been able to do it, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, you, as you say, everybody's got a story, and just that chance meeting with Paul Hembry changed my life and changed Morella's life and changed all her little friends. And, you know, Paul was amazing. He used to go and visit Morella and the other children every time he was at the Pirelli factory. He'd go and take them toys and, you know, what a tremendous guy. And I will forever be in his debt, because he helped me not only start but finish a passion project that meant the world to me. So
that's amazing. What an incredible story, and fair play to him as well. And I don't know whether that got covered publicly, his involvement at the time, but you know, he's another one of those characters who, you know, working for Pirelli and often being the mouthpiece for them, got an incredibly rough ride, you know, when there were instances of tire failures and so on. And, you know, he got such such a hard time from social media and the press and so on. And it's nice to hear such a positive spin on him and his involvement. So fair play to him. That's amazing. And what a cool story. So we'll obviously share all the links to Hope and Homes for Children along with this podcast, because it sounds like an incredible thing that you're doing there. So really big kudos for that. Amazing stuff.
Thanks. I have to say that people like Damon and Johnny and Martin Brundle and Jensen, Daniel, Ricardo, they've all been amazing. They've all Felipe Massa, they've all come to my fundraisers and over the years and really supported me. So there's a lot of love and there's a lot of philanthropy within Formula One that you don't hear about. And these guys do a hell of a lot behind the scenes to make a difference. And I'm so grateful for them for that.
Brilliant. No, that's great. Well, you know, anything we can do, of course, in our own small little way, we'd love to, but we can certainly talk about that. Talking about people being interviewed like Paul in the paddock, you've interviewed many, if not all, of the good and great that have been in motorsport over the last few years. Who do you always look forward to having a chat to?
Well, Daniel's an obvious one because he never disappoints, you know, and I never forget him saying to me, he'd had a crap race in Spa a couple of years ago. And I remember sort of, you always try to like think about how you can ask the question without further rubbing salt in the wound for the driver. Yeah. Because the last thing they really want to do is be talking to you. So you always try to sort of soften it and look for the positives, but equally, you know, yeah, it's difficult to package it up sometimes as anything other than just being a rubbish day. And I said to him, I'm really sorry you've had such a bad day. And he said, you know what, don't worry, because one of my bad days is anyone else's great day. You know, I'm living the dream. And please don't ever feel sorry for me.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
Because I think a lot of people see Daniel as a bit of a joker, and he is, and he, you know, he's great fun, but he's an incredibly kind person. He's incredibly thoughtful. He's got a massive heart. He really genuinely cares. And so, yeah, he's always a joy to interview.
Yeah, that's nice.
He always seems like the perfect person to have on camera as well. Like if you always get something good out of him, it feels like, regardless of if he's had a crap race or not. Has there ever been a moment where you've sort of been interviewing someone or hosting to camera and you've just thought, I want the ground to swallow me up. I've done something horrific here. Please get me out of this.
Oh my God, so many times. Are you kidding me? it's funny because, you know, look, we're, you know, sometimes as the words are coming out of my mouth, I'm like, what am I even saying? Oh my God. But, you know, hopefully people at home know that you're just human and that you're just trying to process a lot of information. I think one hard part of our job is, and there's no hard parts, it's all great, it's lovely, but one of the trickiest bits is when you're in the pen and all the drivers flood in at the same time and you've got them sort of backing up and you're thinking, and you're sort of starting to sweat because you've got just these notes that you've scribbled as the race has gone on. And say somebody that might have had a fairly, you know, low key race stands in front of you. And you're thinking, oh my God, what happened in his race? And you're scuffling through your notepad going, what even happened in this race? I can't even remember what happened at Alex Albon and K-Mag from Sunday, for God's sake.
Oh, God.
That was big.
Yeah.
But yeah, listen, loads of times. And you know, but I think 90% of the drivers are kind blokes and they know that you're just trying to do a job and they know that you're a conduit for the fans and they quite often want to vent as well. They want to say their piece. So you often just have to tee them up and say, you know, tell me about your frustrations today. You sometimes keep it fairly generic. But I do remember my first ever interview with Michael Schumacher and I was obviously absolutely petrified. And I reached out and I remember Mark Webber, who by the way is another incredible human being. Mark said to me, look, Nats, you just got to be, you know, you just got to sharpen the elbows, get in there. And Mark got the giggles on my first weekend because he was like, where's Nat? Where is she? Because he knew that I was nervous about being there. And he could see me right at the back and he went, yeah, good elbows, Pinks. Like, I was so far back. I just didn't get in there. I was so embarrassed. I was keeping up the thought of it. And when eventually I did get up to Michael to ask him a question, I put my hand on his arm like that. And he went like that and like looked down at my hand on his arm as if to say, what are you doing?
Oh, God.
You're actually touching me. And I think I'm quite a tactile person, so I quite like going in for the hug. I just tapped and I kind of went, ooh.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Oh, anyway, he was lovely as well, so I didn't have anything to worry about.
Good. Oh, amazing. What a story. Get your elbows out. I've seen you do a couple of videos recently looking into electric cars. Now, what's your take on the whole electric world, and particularly in motorsport? You know, if we've got Formula E, we've got this new Extreme E thing coming in. It's getting bigger and bigger every year, really. What's your sort of take on it all?
Well, I mean, I'm really excited by it. So that was a couple of reasons that we got involved with that. So Kirsty Gallagher's a good mate of mine, and we wanted to support our friends' small business. Obviously they're getting a hammering at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's not an advert per se. It's really to support small business within the UK. And this mate of ours, Sam at Volts Leasing. Hey, there you go.
Nice one. There you go, Sammy.
It occurred to me, and I know it sounds, you know, a bit hippie-ish, but it's the truth, that one of the really positive things, apart from being together as a family, that I loved about lockdown was these clear skies and this replenishment of the planet and just no cars on the roads. And I was thinking, God, we've really got a responsibility here, particularly as a mum. You know, I walk the kids to nursery and school, and there's one bit where I have to go down quite a busy road, and I saw this report that said, if you could just choose a different route, it's better for your child's lungs. And of course, my God, you're thinking, oh my God, what am I doing by living in a city with two young kids? So anyway, the long and the short of it was that me and Kirst then said, right, well, let's support Sam. Let's just review a load of cars and put them out there. And we've done about 10 cars now. We're all through the price range that we're just going to drip out over the next few weeks just to show people what your options are in terms of electric and hybrid. And it's getting better. It's getting easier. And, you know, I think we've all got, I think we should all be getting behind it if we can. It's ultimately cheaper to do it, and it's so much better for the planet.
Yeah.
From a racing aspect as well, though, do you think Formula E is sort of the right way to go with electric racing? Do you think, you know, there's talk of things like hydrogen stuff, and I'm not going to claim to be an expert. I don't know if you are either, but just sort of in terms of where a motorsport fan sits, you know, there's obviously everyone keeps saying Formula E is not here to replace Formula One. It never will. But there is that argument, of course, where the world needs assistance, and Formula One surely is not the best type of sport to be assisting in terms of carbon emissions.
No, but I think Formula One under Liberty are making big strides. They're making strides to be carbon neutral by, I think it's 2030, which is very ambitious, but I need to check that actually, because I know that Sky are absolutely leading the way in terms of being carbon neutral. I mean, if you come onto our campus, it's quite incredible how much there's no single use plastic allowed at all on campus. So you can't buy a bottle of water, for example. There's water fountains everywhere. You have to fill up your water bottles. I know that's just a small step, but I realise as a family how much plastic we go through. So we're all making these incremental gains. And actually, I interviewed Alejandro Agad, the guy who set up Formula E for my podcast. And I sort of asked him the same question. And he said, look, you know, we just have to keep exploring and pushing the boundaries, and we have to understand and do what we can to improve the planet. And this Extreme E, which is another one of his creations, sounds wicked.
I know, right?
Getting involved with it. But it sounds brilliant. But look, I always get a bit, you know, I'm not an expert, but I'm interested and I want to learn. I want to educate myself. And I always get a little bit funny about those that are prickly with those that are trying to learn, because until we all try to learn a bit, and it's like the BLM movement, until we all just make improvements to our own individual lives, then nothing will change, you know, on the macro level.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking of the planet, you've obviously travelled a huge amount of it with your work. What's your favourite place to go on the F1 circuit?
Yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? Because whilst there's that much air travel around Formula One, then there will always be problems and implications for the planet. So we do have to consider this. I mean, this truncated season is going to see us racing much more in Europe than ever before, and not going further afield, not taking these long haul flights, and not, you know, increasing our carbon footprint. But in terms of where I love to go, I mean, look, I think you're hard pushed to find a more fun weekend than Monaco. Like, it's just. It's pretty. It's weird. It's surreal. Take it with a trowel of salt, but go, because lots of people say to me, "Oh my god, but you know, can't afford to go to Monaco." Ted and I, one of my favourite ever features we ever did, was doing it on a massive budget or a tiny one. And luckily for me, I got the massive budget. So I got the super yachts and the helicopters, but Ted had to do it on a shoestring. But he did a brilliant job, and he proved that. For a couple of hundred euros, you can go and camp and you can get the bus and the train and have an incredible experience. And Monaco is just bonkers, but brilliant. And it should really be on everyone's bucket list. If you can, you should go.
It is. I remember going there a couple of years ago for the Formula E, and I was simply just trying to find a supermarket to buy some sort of food. And I could find Chanel, I found Bugatti, I found all of these incredibly luxurious. I just want a supermarket. Where can I find one? Eventually, did find.
Yeah,
exactly. Where's the cost cutter?
I did it on a yacht, you know.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah. I'd love to claim it was mine, but it wasn't. It was one that belonged. Well, I think the Chilterns rented it for the week.
What a family they are.
They're lovely. Outside of broadcasting and quizzing, which you've proved you're very good at, we know you can skate a little bit. We've delved into the archives and seen you dancing around the ice, flicking your hair in Dancing on Ice, where
my hair extensions.
Fantastic.
Was it the second week you bowed out?
Yeah.
I didn't bow out. I was unceremoniously dumped.
I didn't want to go there.
No, it's fine.
Have you carried on the skating then, or ever since?
No, I've tried to show off when we go to the skating rink, you know, at Christmas time, and I always make a fool out of myself there as well. No, it was, you know what, it was an amazing experience to be taught how to skate by Torbjörn Dean. I mean, that is like another bucket list thing, isn't it? Yeah. Unbelievable. But I wasn't... I certainly wasn't very well known. I mean, I remember somebody saying, which one's the celebrity? Because they didn't know who I was. And when they saw me skate, they went, well, it must be her because she's rubbish at skating. I was never going to go very far. But I remember saying to my Russian partner, you know, how do you think I'm getting on? He said, well, lifting you, it's like lifting octopus.
Excellent.
I was just terrible.
Brilliant.
It was never...
Well, we won't put that as one of your talents then. So let's look at what are your talents? Do you have any hidden talents? Do you do anything? Like Will Buxton, for example, blew us away because he cooks, he can draw. He plays the guitar. Really one of those annoying people that's just good at bloody everything. What's your thing? Do you have a thing?
No, I'm still looking for that hidden talent. I'd love to be able to sing, cannot sing. I'd love to be able to dance, definitely can't dance.
No, me neither.
Can you move your ears independently?
Ooh.
Absolutely not.
Can you?
Okay, well, that's my thing. Yeah, if you just,
I can put, I'm not going to try it now,
I can do that.
I can put my leg over the back of my neck, over my head.
I'd call that a talent.
Not everyone can do that. Yeah.
I'm weirdly strong. For a skinny bird, I'm weirdly strong. I don't know why, but I can, I can squat my husband.
Okay.
So my husband's nearly 100 kilos and he goes on my shoulders and I can squat him. I think there's a video on Instagram.
Wow.
I'd had a few rum punches on the beach at the time.
I'm still able to do it. I think that is the talent right there. That's what you should go for.
Well, I did it. And I was squatting with him and he's a fitness freak. And he was like, you wouldn't get a rep for that. I was like, oh,
poor technique.
Yeah. The next day I did it again and I said, right, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go for a record. So I think I did 6 squats on the first day. Anyway, the next day I hadn't had anything to drink I couldn't do one. I couldn't even pick him up. So it just goes to show.
Booze. There's nothing wrong with a few glasses of wine. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's flip it around. What are you terrible at? What are you really crap at?
I mean, all the things I just mentioned. Yeah. I cannot sing. I cannot dance. I cannot cook. I'm trying really hard with cooking since being a mum. I'm really trying to get better at that. But, yeah, I don't know. Jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. I like trying new things, so I'll always give it a go.
Well, talking of being a jack of all trades, as a broadcaster, you tend to sort of do a lots of different things, which you've proven. What advice do you have for any young women in particular as well, or any young people who are interested in going down a broadcasting route and particularly motorsport and want to achieve the success you've had?
So I think the best advice that I got given was, well, first of all, just do something you're really passionate about, because then it doesn't feel like work. And then it feels you will genuinely sit up reading, researching, prepping till the middle of the night, and it won't feel like a lot of effort. My mum's 70 and she's still, oh my gosh, she'd kill me for telling everyone that. She's 70 and she's still a practicing barrister who is smashing it in court every day of her life, because she's so passionate about child welfare, which she represents a lot of kids who've been abandoned or abused. And she's so good at it, and she works so hard at it because she's passionate about it. But another little bit of advice that I got that I thought was quite handy was, if you watch a program like a documentary or something that you love, write down the name at the end of the show of the director, the producer, the production company, and just write to them.
Yeah, great
just
idea.
Email them. And, you know, everyone loves to have their ego flattered, and say, I really loved your show. Can I come and see you? Can I have a cup of tea? Can I work for free on something just to show you? I mean, maybe you're not allowed to do that these days, work for free, but I certainly used to go and do work experience at loads of places just to try and build a CV up that would show that I was committed and work hard. And then once you're there, be the first to arrive and the last to leave every day. Even if it kills you, just work your socks off, because there's, as my dad always tells me, there's no substitute for hard work. Just get involved, get your hands dirty, get on with it.
Absolutely.
Very, very sound advice.
Great advice.
Well, Natalie, we have kept you for far too long, but we have a final three questions to ask you, which we ask to all of our guests. So I'll kick off with the first one. What's got you excited right now?
Interviewing Alex Albon this afternoon, and you reminded me that he came off in the first lap with K-Mag.
Thank you. If I don't get a mention of that, I'll be fuming.
Number two, if not doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
I would probably, and I certainly toyed with it, go the same route as my mum, because she and I are very similar people. So I actually had a place at law school that I kept deferring for years. But I do love broadcasting. You never know. I will potentially... My mum didn't qualify as a barrister until she was 40. So anyone can have a career change at any point in their life. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
And final question. What are you scared of?
Oh, my God. Long list. Snakes, the dark.
Mm. Oh, I know the dark.
I sleepwalk a lot.
I hate that. Oh, it freaks me out.
Really?
I sleepwalk a lot, so I'm scared of what I will do at nighttime, because I quite often wander downstairs. And
have you had any weird things happen when you've been sleepwalking?
God, are you kidding me?
What do you do when you sleepwalk? Do you like make a cup of tea, or what do you do?
I evacuated the hotel in Texas.
No,
at the
you
Grand
didn't.
Prix, in Austin.
What?
I told them there was a flood. I've been found outside in the corridor by security guard with my hairbrush interviewing nobody, because I was sleepwalking.
Oh, my God, this is amazing.
I banged on the doors at the Belgian Grand Prix, waking everybody up. I've done so many things. I mean, luckily the whole team know now, so everybody knows. They're like, oh, it goes pinkers again.
Why has Sky not done a feature on that
this
yet?
Is amazing. So hang on, you've left your hotel room, you've gone down an elevator to reception and told someone in the lobby that there's a flood in the hotel.
Yeah.
It's the best thing I've ever heard.
So do you know what I do now? I actually... Well, I've done it for the last few years. I put a suitcase against the door and then a chair in front of the suitcase. I almost build like an assault course so that I trip over stuff and that wakes me up. I've got really bruised shins from just walking into stuff.
Wow. That is incredible.
That's amazing. This needs to be investigated more. This is but yeah, clearly yeah. Completely cuckoo. Well, listen, as Harry says, we've kept you for long enough this morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to chat with you and hear your story and guidance, advice for those coming up into broadcasting in their own worlds, and your thoughts on sport and so on. Let's hope the racing continues. We don't get a second lockdown and all have to, you know, go backwards and back to being indoors the whole time.
It's not going to happen.
Positivity. Best foot forward. But thanks so much for joining us. Natalie Pinkham, that's been the Motormouth Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth Podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth Podcast.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.